I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Serve Remember Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Serve Remember Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/innerAcademy.
Teaching meditation can be a deeply rewarding experience. Help others improve their mental and emotional well-being, reduce stress, improve focus, increase self-awareness and self-regulation, all while deepening your own practice and understanding. Join acclaimed author, Buddhist teacher, and Emmy Award-winning musician David Nickturn on Tuesday, May 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for a free online discussion on teaching meditation in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/be-here-now for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nickturn on May 28th.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, everyone. Raghu, I am back with an old friend, Locke Kelly. Welcome back to Mind Rolling, Locke.
Thanks so much. Really great to be here with you, Raghu.
Thank you. We're going to talk about, Locke's got a wonderful new book that is just chock full of so much practice opportunity aside from getting one's perspective hopefully switched around a little bit. But before that, you know, as I'm reading through, last time we were together, you mentioned that you were doing in India, you were in Ceylon doing the Long Sri Lanka, doing this meditation course, right?
Yes.
Trying to get as straight as possible. And you came out of that, and I guess you went to see Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche, right?
Yes, that's right.
And you said in that particular moment, in one flash, you got whatever, you know, any kind of long retreat would, you know, and I love that. I love that.
Yeah. But, yeah. So I had gone on a fellowship from graduate school at Columbia Union Theological to Sri Lanka for 9 months. And I had studied at the university there and also done a bunch of 10-day retreats, 21-day retreats, 5-day retreats in the insight meditation, Vipassana, Theravada tradition, and had a wonderful experience. And then went up to India and actually went to Dharamsala, and the Dalai Lama had just come back from teaching for the first time on Dzogchen in France. And so he had just arrived back as I was there, and a small group of us were allowed an audience, and he was enthusiastically talking on this non-dual tradition in the Tibetan Buddhism, which is called Dzogchen, which is a kind of a direct path pointing out tradition. And I loved the talk. And so I said, I raised my hand and I said, who should I go study with? And he said immediately, Tulku Urgen Rinpoche. And so I changed all my plans and took a bus and a train and a, you know, on my way over to Nepal, and then hiked up the mountain to Nagi Gampa, which is a very small little place he was at the time. And the second day I was there, he gave a little talk and then gave these pointing out instructions. And within 3 minutes, I was feeling the same way I felt at the end of a 21-day retreat. So that got my curiosity. And what he explained was there's two types of mindfulness, deliberate mindfulness and effortless mindfulness. And this is effortless mindfulness because that which we are seeking is already here within us. And so rather than it needing to be built like a skill, like playing the piano, it can be initially recognized and realized. And then there's a period of unfolding and integrating that follows that.
That period is maybe what, a billion lifetimes, that period?
Well, that's the curious thing. So my contention in this book is that awakening is possible, and it actually is the next natural stage of human development. And so, you know, we can talk about what that means, because I'm not talking about full enlightenment or full Buddhahood as, but an initial shift that's dramatically different than ego-centered consciousness.
Yeah. How about we say you stop giving that such a shit about yourself and start thinking about everyone else or other people, the other. Right?
That's a good part of the definition.
That is awakening, totally, to me. Absolutely, you know, and it's very, very difficult. But I want to... So everybody out there, I did a podcast with, actually Krishnadas and I did a podcast with Mingyur Rinpoche, Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche's son. And that was made possible by an introduction from Locke. And I thank you so much for that because it was so illuminating. Everybody, if you haven't either watched or listened to that, you should. And he, by the way, he was in Kathmandu. Right? He was perfectly, the bandwidth, everything, it worked out like perfectly from Kathmandu. I have more trouble with people who are in New York. Yeah.
Right.
He is such a reflection of this book of yours, The Way of Effortless Mindfulness.
Yes.
It's extraordinary. And what comes through so powerfully is love. I mean, his manifestation of a real unconditional love and for himself, for everything around him, and that awareness. It's just an extraordinary thing to actually be in the presence, which, you know, by video chat you are.
That's right.
But so now you've spent some time with him. I just want to hear more about spending time with these beings that have actually, you know, as of course happened to me in India many years ago with Nick Karoli Baba.
Yeah, and I'm glad to talk about, you know, some of the people who are, you know, more realized. But I've also spent time with beings, a lot of beings, like hundreds of beings who are initially awake. And that's a group that's really interesting too, because they're supporting each other through community, and their lives have shifted dramatically from, as you say, kind of a self-centered attempt to manage thoughts, feelings, sensations, and subject-object fears and worries and trauma, and to accessing this loving awareness, or I call it open-hearted awareness. Ram Dass calls it loving awareness. And that's the feeling of being that isn't a state of mind like a loving kindness meditation. It isn't a state. It actually is our real condition. It's who we are when we drop out of the small, contracted, separate sense of self. So that can be helped by these beings. I've studied with both Sony Rinpoche and Mindra Rinpoche, probably done 10 to 20 retreats with each of them.
Oh, really? Tokni? You mean Tokni Rinpoche?
Yeah, Tokni Rinpoche's Toku Ergen's other son.
Son, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he had a few sons. That's the incredible part of it. You know,
he had four.
Choki Nim, the fourth. Yeah. I don't even know his name, and we don't hear about him so much. But I'm sure he's quite something in his own. How do you get to a family like that? How can you get in there? I mean,
that was a fortunate time. I mean, now everything's changed. It's now a Mingyur Rinpoche. He and I used to hang out in New York at our friend Jill Satterfield's apartment and just spend days together. I drove him up to MIT conference in a car, he and his translator and me, and just laughing and singing and and exchanging, kind of pointing out instructions as we looked out the window of the car, and then we went swimming in the pool up there. And now I literally have a hard time ever getting a chance to say hello, even when I'm at a retreat.
Mm, really?
So it's a new time. There's now, 400 people at retreats, and he's doing a great service to bigger audiences and, trying to get out the word about the basics to most people.
I love the title to his book, too, In Love With Everyone. In Love With The World. Yeah. Or something.
In Love With The World.
In Love With The World, yeah. And he said, he says, regarding his father, because we were asking about his father, well, I was just lucky to be born as a son to one of the greatest meditation masters of the time.
Yes.
Lucky. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think grace, that's a good word.
Whatever that, fortunate or...
I mean, I believe, the work that he had obviously done. He was a tulku, the incarnate for lifetimes and so on, which begs the next little question here. Not a question, but so in the book, I mean, you use phrases like effortless mindfulness is both a natural capacity and a skillful way to connect with ourselves, right?
Yeah. That's cool.
It's a way of being mindful from a different level than we are used to. So that's why I mentioned earlier, rejiggering the perspective to me is the absolute first thing that has to happen.
Yeah.
When you're in stress, when a person is in stress and it's suffering tremendously, which happens to everyone at one point or another, I suppose one could say that's the reason for practice for that moment, that to expect you suddenly to start practicing in that moment is a bit of a fallacy. I mean, you have much less chance of opening your space in that moment or being able to connect with that space. Yeah. Just talk about it from, much of the way that you speak throughout the book is, and pointing out so many pointers, just fantastic for people. But it's not a big, but there is a way though that it seems easier. than it might be.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean by that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the thing is, it is simpler than most people imagine if you really find out what is it that can know this loving awareness and how to do it and where to look and where not to look, once you discover how to shift out of the small contracted part of yourself that is in the center, and then not just get caught in the gap, but literally go right to the solution of the heart mind. It's like dropping from head to heart mind, mm-hmm. or opening to this vast, spacious, what's called Rigpa, or nature of mind. And then not only being aware of it, but starting to be aware from it of the different parts of yourself that are anxious and worried, that feel shame. And so it literally is a learning of a new capacity. And I think it's simpler than has been imagined, and it's learnable and teachable. When I look at things like, you think about 100 years ago, and you even talk to people then about microchips. You know, what's a microchip? How could you have a microchip? Well, I think our consciousness now, we have both East and West education. We have neuroscience, we have psychology, and all the wisdom traditions have been accessible for the last 20 years. So we've been able to learn and kind of reverse engineer and get these pointers from these masters of the East, and then reinvent a way to make them more accessible to Western contemporary people. And here's the thing that's, I think, the most amazing thing about that is that sometimes the story is that it's only for the advanced Olympic athletes of meditation to have this awakening. Mm-hmm. But much of my practice has been working with a population of severely traumatized people. So I work with a colleague, Dick Schwartz, who has a system called Internal Family Systems. And this is his experience also, that the people with complex trauma who are severely abused, the thing that we work with to help them is accessing their true nature. And they can access it simply, and it gives them immediate relief. Oh, and then they realize that that's the loving self they've been searching for all their life, that they didn't know was already here. And so that becomes the source of what can heal the most traumatized parts of ourselves, rather than trying to do it from a smart psychological ego.
Yeah. Okay, what do you say? You're sitting in front of a very severely traumatized person who has deep, deep wounds.
Yeah.
What's your first statement to that, or the first thing you say to that person to even tell them there is another, as you say, we can learn that there's another capacity, or there is a capacity to get a completely different vantage from which we're seeing our world?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of ask them that exact, almost like you just said, it is, if there were, I don't tell them, but I said, if there were a capacity that's available to you, that's already loving and could heal and be with and unburden these parts of yourself that feel limited and feel like there's no hope, would you be interested and willing to give it a try?
Mm.
And they say, well, yeah. And then we say, okay, well, we've found that it's possible, and there are people, and sometimes people who have gone through the process can talk to each other, like a support group, say, well, I was where you were, and 3 years later, my life is completely different, and I thought I would be completely depressed and shut down and afraid my whole life, but the thing that changed isn't just the content or the healing. It isn't a matter of what's arising. It's a matter of who or what is it arising to. that changes everything. So even in the beginning, while there's still pain and fear arising, that's not the place to take your spiritual temperature, is how much pain or fear. It's really what or who is it arising to? That's the change we do in effortless mindfulness. We upgrade the capacity of loving presence so that this detox can happen.
I love that. Upgrading the capacity of loving awareness or loving attention. Okay, yeah. So what's the first, so somebody sitting across from you goes, yeah, of course I want to. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so, and everybody, this is the West. What's the first practical thing you can tell me to do to even entertain that there is that possibility to connect with a new capacity?
So what I did is I looked at, that exactly took that question. That was my question, just as sincerely it is yours and others. And then I said, okay, so I stumbled into these, you know, Zen and then TM and then deliberate mindfulness, Vipassana, and then more Mahamudra and Dzogchen style. And then also had some Taoism and other wisdom traditions. And I looked at them and I felt into what works, who's it working for, how's it working, how's it similar. Let's compare, almost bringing the scientific interest and access to what works, how does it work, what's effective, where do people go wrong, where are the roadblocks and where are the eddies and traps and detours that people get caught in. And then really finding a couple different ways that work fairly similarly throughout wisdom traditions, and then start to teach the capacity for, instead of thought looking to thought, to have awareness unhook from thinking and begin to look to the awake, contentless, spacious awareness that is the source or the ground that is already at peace, that's already calm, and then notice that that awareness is energetically dancing and is embodied and open-hearted and has a feeling of unconditional love naturally. And so that's like a little description with words, but as you know from looking at my book, I have a whole bunch of practices and ways to lead people or teach people or show people different doorways that match their type of learning skill on how to feel this for the first time directly. Mm.
And my own feeling, and like you, well, my main practice was and has been for all these years Vipassana, along with a couple of other things, but I tell people that forget everything if you are constantly chasing and identifying and reacting to your thoughts and emotions, you know it's very difficult, and it would be very difficult for me to think that someone just getting into this and realizing there is a capacity, I like that word, that they would, you know. It's not so accessible in my mind, spacious awareness and so on, without getting some kind of one-pointedness through a meditation practice as the very first thing. What do you think about that?
I think that that is traditional, and I think it's can be helpful for some, but I actually believe from my experience it can be actually a roadblock for others. The attentional system of the that you develop in what I'm calling deliberate mindfulness, or the first couple practices of insight, which is one-pointedness on your breath, and then Second one is observing contents of consciousness, what's called the four foundations of mindfulness, which is looking at thoughts, feelings, bodily sensations, and mind objects, which are like creations in the mind of patterns or skandhas. That creating an observer that is looking at content, that it requires that that attender can't look at awareness, that its skill set is a level of mind that can't know the next level of mind. So that four foundations of mindfulness, I have created the five foundations of effortless mindfulness. And if people listening can feel as if you can attend to thought going by, and then what you actually do is you turn around to look who's behind the camera that's looking, or you look to open the awareness to the spacious awareness in which the focuser or the mindful meditator and the objects are appearing. And once you realize that that whole field of awareness is actually what's awake and where you're now aware of the mindful meditator, the attender, and what you're attending to, that that meditator is now an object of consciousness that isn't needed to be lovingly aware, embodied, interconnected. And so you've gone into a non-dual meditative interconnection, which I'm sure is what that's the nature of awake consciousness, which Mingjo Rinpoche and Neem Karoli Baba lived in, is a non-dual interconnected field of awareness that wasn't aware from a point of view, like a meditator. So it's in Sutra, Mahamudra, and Tibetan Buddhism, the Vipassana or insight is the initial practice, and then you can go to the next stage, effortless mindfulness, or for those who it's easier for, you can go right to effortless mindfulness because there's a calm and a focusing ability from there. Because some people have a very hard time wrestling with their minds and watching their breath and sitting for long periods.
Okay. How about a little, just, you know, a short little exercise?
Sure. Yeah.
Related to, because we're talking about awareness, which you basically can't really talk about, but you,
right.
Let's maybe lead us into the opening.
Yes. Sure. Yeah. So, so this is one of the first things to realize is that there's kind of a point of view, a separate subject, whether it's our ego center or even a mindful witness, that they establish a point of view. And what we're going to do is just simply see if we can feel the space that's more spacious and pervasive within us, that we're aware of and that we're aware from. So one way to do it would be just simply, we'll try a couple different ones, but here's the simplest one is simply start with an effortful practice of taking an in-breath and then breathe out and let go like a sigh. Ha. And then just notice a naturally awake spaciousness that feels like it's thought-free, that you're aware of, that feels both outside and within your body, and that maybe you're aware from. So it's these little tiny doorways that are possible to have the premise that you're not aware from thought, that you're shifting to be aware from awareness, awareness-based knowing. That is, the marker is that it's not located in one point of view, that it feels like an open mind or open heart. And it's not trying to solve the problem of identity from this this mini-me in our heads that's kind of a spiritual seeker, that it's already, there's already free nature. So we could try another quick little inquiry from here, is just to inquire, what's here now when there's no problem to solve? And just stay with that feeling of awareness as it opens, and feel that feeling of being that's not thought-based. Feel the qualities that arise. And feel not only what you're aware of, but where you're aware from. So it's a shift of identity and mind rather than a meditative state. That's the key. Then you can talk from here, you can walk from here, you can relate from here, you can create from here. So you get a sense of that?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And obviously, you know, it's that's great.
Yeah.
And I also think that, you know, there's some wonderful connection with what, as you mentioned, Ram Dass talks about loving awareness and moving perspective. And for me, that is absolutely, that's the first thing that needs to happen before even my insistence that people got to, you know, be able to sit.
And get
one pointed. Certainly the perspective. So this is a wonderful opportunity, everybody.
Yeah.
To use that, those couple of questions. And I love, what's here now when there are no problem to solve? Okay. That's a nice con, you know?
Yeah.
Let's talk about mindful glimpses. Okay.
Yeah.
I got into that, and I think it's quite useful exercise. And it, you know, you talk about it's just eminently available throughout the day.
Yes.
Talk about what a glimpse is.
Yes, beautiful. Thank you for that question. Yeah. So the practice of effortless mindfulness, as I see it, is small glimpses many times during the day, rather than long periods of meditation. So certainly if you love sitting, that is always a good practice. So you can do a sit in the morning or to set up your day. But then the key is that effortless mindfulness is meditation for awakening. Awakening is living from loving awareness in the midst of your day, and importantly, with your eyes open, doing tasks and meeting people and talking, not just sitting to calm yourself once a day so that you have a calmer ego to walk around, but literally so glimpsing is not a short meditation. It's literally a shift from small self to large self, from small mind to nature of mind or awake awareness-based mind. And then being able to do that in 1 to 6 minutes while you just look out the window at work or over your computer or while you're taking a walk on a break, or instead of a cigarette break, you take a mindful glimpse break or water cooler break. And then immediately when you shift from the current constellation of thinking and that creates a thinker and an emotional bind with that thinker that's trying to solve problems and creating as many problems as it's solving, as we know, then you shift into this awareness-based, embodied, open-hearted heart-mind, and then you begin immediately to type and talk and walk and relate, and you start to rewire your system to be able to live from an awakened consciousness with difficult situations. When you feel triggered, you'll start to have the triggering come to your heart mind or your open-hearted awake consciousness, and that changes everything. Then you start to get insights immediately. Oh, wow, look at that. I'm triggered. Oh, that's a part of me that feels really hurt, and it's been hurt since I was 3 years old. That's like a 3-year-old part. Oh, sweetheart. And then you kind of turn toward your own part that's been triggered, and you're loving toward that, and then you're realizing the other person is like agitated, and you realize, okay, well, they're really agitated, and they're talking to me in a harsh tone, and all right, let me just stay with them and see if they're, you know, open to calming, and let me calm and see what, you know, let them finish and respond to them. And all of a sudden things start to be compassionately motivated. Mm.
So I think you've characterized this in the book quite well. I'd like to mention it in terms of the mindful glimpse, in terms of this is an all, wherever you are, this is not formal, yeah. It's informal, yet it can be very effective and you call rest stop.
Yes.
We're going to have rest stops and we're going to reboot. All of us can understand that. Okay.
Yes.
You're in your little cubicle looking out at the city or wherever you are, and suddenly, okay, rest stop, reboot.
Yeah.
And just
upgrade the operating system.
Yeah, right. And just be here now.
Yes. And then be here now. And then that's the reason for glimpsing short glimpses is when you be here now, you can't make an effort to remain. You have to let go. So that's a surrender. So you do small, you learn these tools, and that's the main thing that's hard, except through example and through this book and through some audio or through a retreat, is to learn how to do this for yourself. But once you learn how to shift your own, what I call local awareness, and have it open to the spacious, already awake awareness, and then that awake awareness notices that it's embodied and open-hearted and loving, then from this ground of being, you can't make any effort from system one, from the old operating system, to try to grab it, hold it, maintain it, keep it. So you have to let be in the now. So you just have to be here now, speak, and then lose it, go back to the old habit. No big surprise, just re-recognize.
Right. And you, as Sharon Salzberg says so often, the fabulous part of all of this, you can always come back.
That's it. Yes.
You can always come back. And that's a nurturing, nurturing thought, actually.
Yeah. And the difference it would say is like in that instruction, which is the same, is you can always come back to the object of your meditation. In effortless mindfulness, you can always come back to your already awake consciousness.
Or can we say you can always come back to an openness?
Yeah.
To make it just an openness that allows for spaciousness to move in and create a larger pool that you're sitting in.
Yes. And that stillness. The openness is awake. So it's not just a meditation like feel open, but notice the openness is where you're aware from and what is the nature of open mind that you're knowing from now. So that's kind of the second move of being, notice the openness. Oh, notice the openness is aware without my help. Huh.
Mm.
And now I'm aware from the openness, from the awareness-based knowing of thoughts, feelings, sensations, which are dancing in this field, and I don't have to get on the train of thought.
What do people say to you, how do I know I am not reflecting and from the perspective of ego mind that
yes.
I've managed to trick out
right. yeah.
spiritual bypass? And how do you address that with people?
Yeah, so that's very important. So one of the first things is when you shift from head to heart, mind, you can't go back to the small mind for a second opinion about whether you are there. So that's like the first learning. People are like, what? I was just checking to see whether I was doing it right.
Yeah.
And as soon as you check to see whether it's doing it right, then you're back in the system that isn't doing it, because it can't be done by that small self. So that's the first thing, is to notice there's a conceptual knowing, then there's a not knowing, which is like a gap, and then there's a not knowing that knows, and it knows by feeling, almost like you're riding a bicycle. Do you know you're balancing? And you don't have to go to thought to know you're balancing on the bicycle. You feel, oh yeah, I'm in this awareness-based knowing, and I don't have to use thought. I use awareness to know. And by doing that, you're reinforcing the new knowing, the new operating system. And then the other part of it is that you're not stopping at that first gap of not knowing, and you're not stopping at a disembodied, spacious witness. So that's key. So some systems actually say that that's the goal, is to be in this, what they call non-dual awareness or pure awareness or transcendent witness consciousness. And that's, in my system, like halfway there. It's an important recognition to step out of the small mind and wake up from it into the awareness. But then as soon as the awareness notices thought or any movement, it realizes, oh, it's not separate from it. So that awareness is now embodied and connected, and it sees from the heart, eyes of the heart, oh, so everyone else is me. Oh, we're the same. Oh my God, of course I'm going to treat someone, with love, because that's the view that it has when it's embodied and open-hearted. And so that brings the bypass back to the embodied and the loving way of relating.
Mm. Now, back in the day, again, we're referring to Ram Dass, but I wanted to talk about this, which is witness. That
yes.
was his first thing, and he got a lot of that, probably Gurdjieff and so on.
Yeah, that's right.
And of course, this question I just asked is a major question, because he's not talking about witnessing from mind. He's talking about
right.
witnessing from no mind. So
yes,
there's no judgments.
Right.
There's no dualities. There's none of that.
Yes.
And of course, that's a difficult thing, as you just said,
yeah.
for many
yeah.
people. But a very effective thing. So effective, even if it just reverts on a regular basis to... Mm-hmm. Mind is witnessing.
Yes.
And you actually call that, which I love, leaving the witness protection program.
That's right.
Talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, again, it's there are, in progressive paths, kind of realizations or stages of awakening or stages of meditation. And so the idea is, in effortless mindfulness, is not to get caught in any of these eddies or these halfway houses, like going across the United States from east to west and stopping and camping at the Grand Canyon. You know, you're just like, oh, I'm done. It's like, okay, but you're not to the ocean yet. You got to go to the ocean of love. So it's beautiful. It's spacious. And it's a witness, but it's detached. It's not embodied. And it's not interconnected. So a witness by nature is there's a witness and there's a witnessing. So even the description you hear a lot from meditative consciousness, like choiceless awareness, I'm the sky and thoughts are like birds or clouds coming through. So that's a first stage of being the sky, but you're separate from thoughts and emotions. They're objects that are rising and passing. The next description is ocean and wave. Oh, I'm the ocean of love, and thoughts and feelings are made of the ocean too. And the other person, even painful feelings and anger is made of the ocean. And they're all arising within the ocean of consciousness, which I'm connected to. But there's such a vast depth of loving ocean that even unpleasant feelings that I'm connected to are not overwhelming me as a small wave. But I have the resource and the capacity of the ocean, so I can be connected and feel a unity consciousness more than a witness. So that's the next stage, and that's a real important. I break it down, you know, in go kind of stage by stage and talk about the traps, but also talk about how to navigate those transitions.
I think you had a great story. This there's quite a bit in the book about actually dealing with pain,
physical pain.
And why don't you tell that story? Because I liked it when you were sledding with your nephew.
Yeah. So, this is the thing is that I mean, certainly today with so many people getting addicted to painkillers and, you know, emotional pain, physical pain, mental pain, relationship pain is the feeling that it's too much to bear. You know, how can you, you know, find that which can bear the unbearable? And so that's this loving awareness, because it has a greater vastness or boundlessness, and it also has a greater intimacy. It has a greater loving embrace. I was, you know, in the middle of learning about effortless mindfulness and was with my nephew sledding down a hill. And he was at that age where, as I was starting to sled, he would run and jump into my arms, you know, because he thought that was really fun part. And of course, can we do it again? We do again. And so about the eighth time, he jumped, but he jumped to one side and I caught him on my right side. And my sciatic nerve just went, ah, and, you know, twisted. And I felt like I had, you know, the most excruciating pain. Went to doctors, went to acupuncturists, and so months and months, wasn't really getting that much better. My physician, who actually had been the New York AMA president, was in the Korean War, and he said, he goes, I have sciatica. You just have to live with it. That's it. So that was his medical diagnosis. He goes, you stretch a little bit, you know, or you hear, I'll give you some painkillers. No, thank you. That's all right. So I said, okay, well, my thought was, oh, if thinking can go into the background, can pain, which is really not about a chronic condition, it's a nerve that's twisted. So the nerve is just sending a signal as if there's a knife in my back. But there is no knife in my back. It's just that the wires are twisted. So what I did is I used this method, which is one of the main methods of effortless mindfulness, which is unhooking local awareness from thinking. And it literally is like a ball of awareness that then can be aware of your jaw from within your jaw and then go down into your body and be aware of your body directly from within your body. And so it was like taking the operator where the pain signal was coming from my back and saying, check this out, check this out, check this out. So I took the operator, and the operator, once it unhooks, it's actually the awake me, the awake consciousness that is now moving itself. And it went down and it looked right within that area and it saw there's no knife here, that the signal can now go to voicemail. The signal can go to the field of consciousness rather than to the operator in my head, to that point of view. And so it literally started going into a bigger field of knowing that, you know, it would just relax over time and there wasn't anything to do immediately. It didn't need to keep calling. And so it went from like an 8 to a 2 within that first session. And then it stayed as kind of a little numbness. And eventually over the years, it took, you know, still took a year for it to go from 2 to 0. Mm. But it went to, you know, change dramatically.
And would you, just in terms of, you just talked about moving down into being inside your jaw, moving through. Scanning is the term that I understand from Vipassana, and I think that's an effective thing. Would you corroborate?
So it's a little different. That's a great question. And we can even do a, I'll describe how to do it, and then we can actually do what I call dropping from head to heart.
Okay, good.
So when you scan in Vipassana, and the, you know, I've been a was trained and taught, was one of the first teachers at New York Insight Meditation Center. So I taught Vipassana, and I have heard the instructions from many traditions, which is to, you know, scan your body, or watch your breath, you know, or scan, do a body scan, or, and you. When I ask people, where are you scanning from? They're scanning from their head. So they're located in their head. They're watching their breath from their head or above their head, like a witness. And in this situation, it's like reverse engineering the whole process, which is that if you're already this open-hearted, loving, spacious awareness, then you're, when you're in awake consciousness, you're aware from everywhere. You have a unity consciousness. So awareness doesn't have to look from your head. It can know from the field of awareness. So why not just move the local focus from the head looking down and literally unhook and drop the knowing? So it's knowing your jaw from your jaw, and not going up to thought to check, and not stretching or scanning down, but literally dropping and knowing your throat from within, and then literally dropping into your heart space so that your heart space opens and you're now aware from your heart. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So we can try that.
Let's do a little.
This is one that some people find dramatically helpful to show what a glimpse is. So, you know, if you feel like almost as if you're in a cloud of around your head, like emotional, mental cloud, and what we do is we try to clean up the cloud or fix it or observe it. But literally what we're going to do is ask the already awake you to have awareness somehow step out of that identification or attachment with the thinker or the observer or the focuser or the scanner, step back, and then feel as if a bubble of awareness can drop and know directly from within. So you can't know how to do it. So just give it a try and see what happens. So simply I'm talking not to you, the ego or the doer. I'm talking to you, the awake consciousness, and just simply asking you to notice this feeling of a center or a manager somewhere in your head. And then feel as if awareness can detach and step back. And then feel as if a bubble of awareness can then drop and know your jaw and your smile directly from your jaw and smile. And then feel as if awareness can move itself and become aware of your throat from within your throat. Feeling awareness, space, and effervescent aliveness. And just check that you haven't stretched attention down and that you don't need to go up and check with thought to know. So just knowing subject and object, feeling directly. And then feel as if awareness can drop below your neck. So this bubble of awareness feels directly and knows the sensations, tightness, coolness, space, and awareness directly from within your upper body. And then let this intelligence of this awareness find your heart space, the core of your being, the safe, open door, heart-mind, and drop in so you're knowing directly from this heart space that opens up behind you where awareness has your back and looks out and feels in front of you, interconnected with everything, and goes deep within, like a stream of living water, to this feeling of being that doesn't need to think to know, doesn't need to do to be, just see what it's like to know, to have the potential to know information, but not need to know anything without checking with thought. So what's it like to be alert, open-hearted, and be here now?
That's great. Yeah, that's great.
And how's that?
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. And yeah, and everybody, this is I have been working. You and I talked about it last time. Working on this project about getting out of the me to the us.
Yeah.
And so the idea that we can take a shot, just take a chance, like you just said, take a chance. Here you are. You're this is you. This is the you up here, this thinking thing.
Yeah.
Take a chance and drop it for a second. And that would be, that's a rest stop, a mindful glimpse. And I think that that's very effective just in and of itself. But you also said here, awareness has your back, mother. Yes. Okay. That could be a rap thing. We're going to call it that. Okay, we got to call this thing Awareness Has Your Back.
You know, let's do it. We got to get some music next time.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So great. And by the way, as Locke said, this book is chock full of different exercises. And I'm sure there's something in here for everybody. You know, you got one called for a glimpse, Om Sweet Home.
Yes.
Okay. Corny, but right on. And it's it includes, you know, using a chant or so on. And as you well know, that is the primary practice that we brought back, aside from many of us doing many of the Lama Suryadas, who's a Dzogchen master. Also, this is part of it. He does a lot of chanting.
Yes,
and I wouldn't want to leave us without that as another possibility of of open awareness within that that practice. But Om Sweet Home. But then you also have in your appendix traps, detours, and rerouting instructions. I love that. Okay, you can be spaced out, blissed in, stuck in stillness. Be in that witness protection program, and getting bored back to the mind and getting scared back to the mind. So a lot of shit will freak you and get you back. Because the only thing that we have depended on our whole lives is to protect ourselves through this thing, you know, and with all of those habitual patterns and neurotic tendencies, it's tough. But what everybody out there, what Locke is saying is, we can connect with this capacity that we have, and we just have to be more at ease with ourselves and not absolutely judging and killing ourselves and we're bad and, you know, all of that stuff that everybody does, that this capacity is there. Just stop your world for a second. Because awareness has your back.
That's right.
Here's the book, by the way, everybody.
Yeah.
And when is it coming out, Locke?
It's coming out June 4th.
Okay, around the corner. Or maybe this thing will happen. You know, I don't know how they program it. I just give it to them. But all the links and everything else and links to great beings we've been talking about and their work will all be available on BeHereNowNetwork.com/mindrolling to the show notes and everything. So it'll all be there. And again, Locke, always great. Always great to hang with you.
Yes, so nice. So much fun to hang and be with you for this time.
Yeah,
thank
really,
you
really
very much.
So we will see you all next week on Mind Rolling.